As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Inter Milan are champions of Italy for the 20th time.
L'Inter è campione d'Italia per la ventesima volta nel corso.
Playing an exciting brand of attacking football, it's no wonder Simone Inzaghi is now being linked to high-profile jobs in England and abroad. But is he better off staying in Italy and a resurgent Serie A? Or does uncertainty around finance and the ownership at Inter mean now is the time for a new challenge? I'm Ayoa Kimolare. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. All right, well, with us today we have The Athletic's Italian football writer, James Horncastle. Good to see you, James.
Good to be here.
And look, James, you were at the San Siro for Inter's derby win. They clinched it from their rivals, AC Milan. Just talk us through it, you know, just how poetic was it that Inter clinched it at the San Siro? And also now, what, 20 titles compared to AC's 19 as well? Give us a feeling of what it was like in the stadium.
Well, I mean, this will be remembered as the Scudetto della Seconda Stella, their second star title, because you are able to get a star for every 10 titles you win. Mm-hmm. This is a matter of great prestige in Italy. It was always going to be special regardless. But to do it against your biggest rivals after Juventus in a derby, the stars aligned, so to speak. And it could not be any more perfect. If you're an Inter fan, not only for what happened on the night, but also for what happened 2 years ago as well, which, you know, Inter already had this opportunity to win their 20th title in Simone Inzaghi's first year. They were defending champions at the time. The title race went all the way down to the wire. And ultimately, it was Milan who pipped them on the final day. And that allowed Milan to draw level on 19 titles. And so there was an element of revenge as well, and perfect revenge on Monday night at San Siro. And for me, it was really interesting to see what the Milan fans made of it, because technically it was their home game. So three quarters of the stadium was full of Milan fans, and it was almost like they were having to host a title-winning party for Inter. And the two ends at San Siro, they talked to each other constantly during the game. They talked to each other with chants. They talked to each other with banners. And so some of the banners that the Milan end were unfurling during the game, was it felt like it was one of those kind of, are you okay, hun, moments, in that they had one banner which was like, mathematics is not an opinion, it's a fact. You've only won 19 league titles on the pitch. That alludes to Inter being handed a league title in 2006 after the Calciopoli scandal by an Italian Football Federation tribunal. And then towards the end of the game, when it became clear that Inter were going to win, they unfurled a Juventus emblem, the J, but in blue and black, Inter's colours. And it said, you've become everything you've hated. You lose finals, Champions League finals, like they did against Man City in Istanbul. Juventus famous for losing Champions League finals. And you steal leagues, they alleged as well. And so I think all of that made the occasion more special for Inter, to just see the pain that it brought not only Milan, but I think also Juventus, because Andrea Agnelli, the former Juventus chairman, he tweeted on the night, a date in Roman numerals, which anyone not sort of literate in them was rapidly sort of Googling. And it was the date of when Juventus won their 20th title back in the early 80s. So like 40 years ago. So like, we did this years ago. I don't know why you guys are out celebrating it. But all of that to see the torment it put everyone in Italy in who's not an Inter fan, I think that Schadenfreude was tremendous for Inter.
What's been also really interesting is how Inter won the title this season. You know, Inzaghi was interviewed after the match and he was like, I mean, we technically won it in March, but we just had to mathematically get to the point where, you know, we had to win it outright. And also what? Conceded only 18 goals this season, only lost one game in Serie A. I mean, this is folklore stuff. This is special.
Yeah. Like last season in Serie A, a lot of people thought, wow, this Napoli team is so special. Mm. They've run away with the league. They were setting club records. It looked like they were going to set Serie A records. But Inter have kind of gone one better. They can still finish with more than 100 points. And, you know, to talk about, you know, how they've been really ruffling feathers, when they drew against Cagliari last week at San Siro, it meant they could no longer break the all-time points record for a single season in Serie A, which is 102 points. It was set by Antonio Conte in his last season at Juventus in 2014-15. And Daniele Conte, Conte's brother basically, put out photos of his brother with the T-shirt record and all this sort of thing, sort of taking pride in the fact that it wasn't going to be broken. But for Inter, like, to still be able to get more than 100 points just goes to show how dominant they've been. You mentioned their defensive record, something that hasn't really been talked about a lot because everyone's been focused on their attacking style of play and how entertaining this team is to watch. How at the very sharp end of football innovation and tactics they are, because it's a team that's very innovative, total football-like, players exchanging positions, centre-backs playing in midfield, midfielders playing in defence in terms of goals that are scored, wing-backs crossing to wing-backs to finish moves, centre-backs crossing to centre-backs to finish moves, 17 different goal scorers. They've been on the score sheet in 40 consecutive games. They started 2024 by winning their first 13 games in all competitions. So a procession. Like, I mean, it's felt like it's been Inter's title really ever since the first Milan derby when they beat Milan 5-1, which was their biggest win in that fixture in half a century. So I think leaving aside what we spoke about on Monday night in terms of how significant it was for a fan base to do it against their rivals, statistically alone, this season is special.
Javier Zanetti, you know, said, you know, as a fan and executive, it's a huge pleasure to watch this team play. You know, it's hard to draw comparisons. This Inter team definitely entertains. You know, it's a very strong team, like the treble winning one. I mean, obvious comparisons, right? Like that would be the big question. That Jose Mourinho side that won the treble in 2010. Can we see similarities here with that same type of squad? Maybe player profile might be different, but style of play, how they've dominated this season.
I think this is a special Inter team. And as I mentioned, the way the stars aligned on Monday night, it will be an Inter team that's talked about for generations.
Okay.
I think there are maybe four or five really mythical Inter sides. There's the one that started winning European Cups in the 1960s, the Grande Inter, which has always been a bit of a benchmark. Is the one that won the league in the late 80s that set a points record in the time where it was 2 points for a win. That was Trapattoni's Inter, which had Lothar Matthäus, Andy Bremer, players like that. And then for, I think, the most recent generation of Inter fans, yeah, that treble winning side under Jose Mourinho, yeah, there's still a banner in the curva at San Siro, which is Jose Mourinho's name, you know, immortalized. And that is a feat that had never been done before. It's never been done since. So that team will always be, I think, the one that people talk about fondly. But this team plays a style of football, which I think is probably the best style of football any Inter fan has ever seen. I was in the press stands at San Siro on Monday night, and there was an 80-year-old, no, he wasn't 80, he was in his 80s, Milan fan there. He will have seen a lot of great Milan teams. I think even if there was an Inter fan in his 80s next to me, or her 80s next to me, they'd seen a lot of great sides. They would recognize that this is probably the most entertaining Inter side. Because if you look at the one in the 60s, that was the one that kind of pioneered Catenaccio, the sort of ultra-defensive Italian way of playing, which became the ideology because it was so successful in the 60s. Trap in the late 80s, somewhat synonymous with Il Gioco all'Italiana, which is, again, sort of Italian style of play. Mourinho, everyone remembers. I mean, they played some wonderful football, but everyone remembers the backs against the wall job they did against Barcelona in the second leg of the Champions League semi-final in 2010. This Inter side has just been a joy to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, and as I said, it's very much in step with what we all think of as quote-unquote good football in today's age, which is, yeah, slick in possession, great pressing, a bit different from a lot of the other sides that we associate being at the vanguard of football at the moment, because they play with two strikers. And so, yeah, I think for that reason, I would say that Monday night to win in a derby, which had never happened before, is up there with winning the treble at the Bernabeu. I think the treble at the Bernabeu will still remain the pinnacle for Inter, but Monday nights will come very close for Interisti.
I was reading your latest piece that's on The Athletic at the moment on Inter Serie A win and second star in the realization of a dream, and also nightmare for Milan. And you know what? I love scrolling through the comments just to see. And there's some incredibly positive comments. But one in particular caught my eye from Paul S. Says, very pleased for Inzaghi. You know, his evolution from cup king to league dominator has been magnificent. And that's the person we haven't really spoken about, really. Simone Inzaghi, right? This is really interesting because it hasn't been a smooth ride, has it?
No, it hasn't. He had a big job to do when he got the job at Inter, because he was taking over from Antonio Conte. And, you know, Conte is the guy who does the really hard work. Mm. Yeah, I think in the last 48 hours, a lot of people have said, Conte, this guy, he always walks out on teams just as they're about to really go places. And yet, he lays the foundation. You know, Juventus, yeah, they hadn't won the league in 7 years. He wins it, first season go undefeated. Next season, more points. Third season, 102 points. Great work. At Inter, they hadn't won the league since 2010 when he won it. He was the guy who ended Juventus' 9-year domination he started. Mm-hmm. So to walk in his shadow, it's a little bit like what we're talking. It's not like this, because this is like replacing Ferguson, but you can see it's quite an intimidating job to take over in terms of, like, yeah, whoever's going to take over from Klopp at Liverpool. Sure. And then the reason why Conte left was because in COVID, Inter's owners had all these financial problems. It meant that they were going to have to cut back. They had to take out this big loan from a Californian hedge fund to prop the club up. They sold Romelu Lukaku to Chelsea, Hakimi to PSG. It didn't, for a new manager coming in, it's like, who am I going to have to work with here? And Inzaghi, from the get-go, I remember his first game, I think it was against Genoa, blew them away. And the title race went down to the final day. They should have won it. And I think this is the thing, Dio, with Inzaghi, is that if there's one knock, Inter should have won 3 of the last 4 titles, maybe, rather than 2. You know, one with him, one with Conte. Because it feels like this has been a bit of a dynasty in disguise. They've been cleaning up. You know, they've been to a Europa League final, Champions League final. They've won the Coppa Italia twice, Super Cup twice. They've won the league twice now. But the way Inzaghi has pulled himself often back from the brink, you know, last season, losing the title on the final day against Milan left a real echo. And it was hard to sort of drown that out. And, you know, they lost
I think 12 league games, which was the most in a long time since 2011-12. And so people were saying, ah, this guy, you know, he can't manage games, his substitutions are wrong, he's lost the title to Milan, get him out. In the final third of last season, something clicked. And they not only were playing this style of football that we've now become accustomed to, but to reach a Champions League final and to play so well against Man City. And as Pep Guardiola said only the other day, Pep Guardiola said this, I'm a Champions League winner with Manchester City because a striker for Inter missed a header from 3 yards.
It's Lukaku. It was Lukaku.
And that's how close Inter were to taking the game to extra time. And I think there was a feeling that because City had been in a treble winning campaign, all of the stress and strain that brought, that Inter would have outlasted them. Yeah, to do that with Inter, I think when they came back from Istanbul, they didn't return to Milan defeated. Mm. They returned thinking, wow, we could have beaten this immortal treble winning Man City team. Mm. And they and Simone Inzaghi have made Serie A look very easy this season since then. They played with a real aura about them. I think there'll be lots of coaches around Europe looking at how they play and Inzaghi's tactics and learning from them. Yeah, I think what's really interesting is that if you look at Max Allegri at Juventus, the last guy to dominate in Italy, you know, he always said, he very much incarnates this Juventus mentality, which is winning isn't important, it's the only thing that counts. So how you win doesn't matter. It's only about winning. But everyone who's won the league since then, it is about how you win. And yeah, Inzaghi is the latest. I mean, I think one of the great things about Serie A is like over the last 5 years, there's been four different winners in club terms, Juventus, Inter, Milan, Napoli, Inter again. But they've all been coached by different guys. Five different coaches have won the league in the last 5 years, which I think goes to show the depth of coaching in Italy. And also, like, it really keeps these guys sharp. They have to keep innovating, have to keep changing. And I think Inzaghi has shown himself to be the best of them all, really.
Does that show a different style of Italian football than we're accustomed to?
Yes.
You think of the old defensive fortresses of the past. You've talked about this.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at now a team that plays on the front foot, super attractive. You compare that to Bayern Munich, compare that to Manchester City, compare that to the Arsenals of this world. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Like, yeah.
Is this a new evolution of Italian football with him at the helm of it, really?
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. All of the guys who've won the league since Allegri incarnate this front foot, attacking, pressing style of football. Even the guys who haven't won the league do. Gasperini, for example. But if you look at Juventus' last title-winning coach, Sarri, if you look at Conte, who, you know, I think, and Gasperini has said this. Gasperini said, like, it was held against him for many years that he played with the back three, even though his centre-backs joined in attack and got forward. There was always this stigma against the back three that I think went back to the late 80s, early 90s, playing a sweep, bringing the shutters down on teams. And I think that was true of Conte as well. When people think of Conte as being a negative coach, even though I think he does quite a few of the same things that De Zerbi does, which is let's sit back, invite teams onto us, and then have choreographed passing patterns to play through them. And then we've got all those wide open spaces. So you've got Sarri, an attacking coach who wins the league with Juventus, Conte with Inter, Pioli with Milan, Spalletti with Napoli in particular, and Inzaghi with Inter. And all of those guys, I would say, are part of this, players who grew up with Arrigo Sacchi's team and being able to implement some of the concepts that they've seen from him into what I think is a true reflection of Italian football. And I never thought Catenaccio in the 60s reflected Italy. You know, I always think when people think of Italy, they think of style. They think of incredible beauty.
Adventure to a certain degree.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think this is the true Italian football now. And I think that's why some of the other coaches have been left behind and find it difficult to cope in this new environment.
You're listening to the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwolere. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to michelobultra.com/courtside to learn more.
One thing we haven't spoken about is a slight uncertainty about what's going to happen with Inter as a club next. You know, we talked about, you know, Inter in our Clubs in Crisis series and, you know, this huge debt looming over them from a loan that their president has taken out. I mean, what's the situation with that this moment in time? You have a team that's playing this front foot football, everything's looking great, but no one really knows what's actually happening with the club.
Yeah, that's exactly the state of play at this moment in time. I mean, Stephen Zhang, the president of the club, he wasn't at the title celebrations. He was at a sporting event in the last 7 days. That was the Shanghai Grand Prix. And yeah, you ask yourself, okay, if you can go to the Shanghai Grand Prix, why can't you go and celebrate Inter's 20th title? It's a historically significant moment. But he's busy trying to refinance the loan that they took out in COVID. It's a loan that the company his family set up took out. It's not been a debt that's loaded on Inter, but they have to find a way either to repay this Californian hedge fund Oaktree more than $300 million by May 20th, or Oaktree can basically enforce that debt and take over Inter. Now, Suning are in talks with Oaktree about refinancing it. Suning are also in talks with another fund called PIMCO, which would give them money to pay off Oaktree. But I mean, the reason we wrote that Club in Crisis section on Inter, obviously it was part of a series. The interesting thing is that there's been litigation brought against Stephen Zhang, separate from Inter, by China Construction Bank over unpaid debts. Recently the Court of Appeal in Milan found in favor of China Construction Bank when it came to actually saying, okay, the ruling in Hong Kong about those debts that need to be paid is also valid in Italy. Mm-hmm. And so he hasn't been in Italy now since last year's Champions League semifinals. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens between now and May 20th. The club seems to be optimistic that he can stay on and still be the owner. But I think if you're, again, looking to refinance a loan, it brings about questions, well, can you keep growing the club? Is the club's strategy still going to be to sell one or two or maybe even three of its top players every year and sign players on free transfers? Can you really go about funding and building a new stadium if you're continually in this situation of kicking an expensive can down the road? So that's one of the big question marks that has been looming over Inter, but I think also Italian football over the last 3 years, because Inter have been the most successful club. Yeah, in terms of brand Serie A, people are now talking, tuning in to Serie A to watch Inter. And I think it's important for the league and its development over the next 5, 10, 15 years that this situation gets resolved and the likes of Inter and Milan are able to maybe partner on a stadium and push Italian football forward. Because certainly if Italian clubs are to close the gap with Premier League teams, their competitors in Spain, they need to invest in infrastructure that will allow them to make more money and allow them to put that money back into the team, retain their best players rather than having to sell them. Yeah, it's something that for the next month, or it's actually less than a month. It's April 24th today. Yeah. This loan is up on May 20th.
Yeah.
So that will now become the focus.
Yeah.
As much as everyone's been celebrating in Piazza del Duomo, the title. Yeah, Steven Zhang was joining Instagram Lives to talk to his players.
I saw him with Marcus Thuram.
Yeah. So Zhang was obviously not there. He was in China. Mm. And he's joining these Instagram Lives to talk to his players. And the funny thing was is that Marcus Thuram and Hakan Çalhanoğlu, I think it was one of them said to him, you know, you signed us for nothing on free transfers. You know, we cost less than some of your cars. Where's our present? You know, and Thuram in particular was like, I'd like a watch. And Zhang said, he was joking. He's like, you know, yeah, maybe it was a mistake to accept the invite to this Instagram Live. But his absence has been, you know, conspicuous, I would say. And I think, you know, there haven't been enough questions about it, I think, in sections of the Italian papers, because it's a massive story.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalera.
Bellissimo, bellissimo traguardo, un mix di emozioni che voglio condividere con tutta la famiglia Inter, insomma.
Well, let's move on to Inzaghi, really. Once again, you know, you look at clubs across Europe now who might be looking for a new manager, Liverpool, Bayern Munich. I mean, you know, I don't think it'd be any coincidence that his name might be part of the names connected to these clubs. But I just want to go to you because, I was just watching an interview just before we started chatting on the podcast to try and gauge who he is as a character. And I don't say bland is the word, but it's very hard to read him. The interview, they just won Serie A. And it was so measured to just be like, yeah, you know, we could have won it in March. It didn't seem to give that sort of animation. What is he like as a person?
Yeah, it's a great question. Like he has this very deep voice. He uses the sort of same expressions over the time. You know, we want to prepare in the best way possible. You always hear these kind of, not cliches, but he's not particularly charismatic, I would say, in the way that some other Italian coaches are. He also is not, he does get emotional. You do see him wear his heart on his sleeve, but he's not as emotional as, say, his brother, Pippo. You know, everyone remembers like Pippo's goal celebrations, which I think he describes as orgasmic.
Looked like he was crying at times, right?
Yeah. And Simone is a little bit more restrained, but he, you know, he's done a magnificent job in, I think, you look at his first time at Lazio. Yeah, he spent 22 years at Lazio as a player and then as a coach. He restored them to relevance and competitiveness. He did clearly not an underrated job because he then got the Inter job. But to win cups, Coppa Italia, Super Cup, to get them back into the Champions League after a long time, to get them into Champions League knockout stages at the first attempt, and then to continue and build on what Conte did at Inter is magnificent. I mean, he's associated with playing a back three. Yeah, that's how he was successful at Lazio. Is how he's been successful at Inter. I wonder, as we said before, does playing a back three, does that hurt you when you come into the conversation for other jobs in other leagues? Mm. You know, I would say, yeah, Bayern have alternated over the last couple of years, playing a back three, playing a back four. City do it. Yeah, this is, again, something that Gasperini pointed out. All of you judged me negatively for playing a back three. Did you watch last year's Champions League final? Inter play with a back three, City play with a back three. So I wonder if that maybe counts against him. Certainly, I think, as we said, if you look at his tactics, they're among the most innovative in world football at the moment. I would also say, like, you know, most people are saying, why isn't this guy in the conversation for Liverpool or Bayern or Barcelona? He's at Inter, right? I think
big club.
People on social media need to remember, Inter a massive club.
Commercially and in Serie A.
But, I mean, yeah, this is one of, I'd say, 12 legacy clubs in the world, which are massive. You know, won the Champions League 3 times, won the league 20 times. You think of the great players that have played for Inter, so many Ballon d'Or winners, you know, from, you know, Ronaldo to Roberto Baggio to Lothar Matthäus to the original Luis Suarez. You know, they are one of the biggest clubs in the world. And if you go to San Siro on a weekly basis, you'd think, does it get any better than this? So, you know, his contract is up in 2025. They're going to have a conversation about that. They're going to have a conversation about Lautaro's contract as well, the skipper. But, you know, I think there's probably a sense, if anyone was putting the feelers out with Inzaghi, that he's someone who's very happy where he is at Inter. And certainly maybe doesn't feel fulfilled yet, even though he's won the Coppa Italia Super Cup twice with them, even though he's won the league with them. I think there's a feeling that if they are able to keep the core of this group together, they can reach a Champions League final again. Yeah, in my mind, they should be still in the competition right now because they had the chances to beat Atletico. First leg, they should have won that 3-0. They blew some of those chances. Second leg, they take the lead. And again, yeah, Lautaro, though, he missed a penalty in the shootout. He puts Thuram through 1-1-1. He puts Barella through 1-1-1. They should have wrapped that game up. And you look at how the draw subsequently happened. They would have played Dortmund in the quarterfinals. I think they're a better team than Dortmund. And they would have played PSG in the semifinals. And I don't think they would have been afraid of PSG either. So I think he feels like he's still got more to give. And there's still more work to do at Inter. And yeah, long may it continue.
Let's talk about Serie A. We sort of alluded to it at the top, really, and this exciting brand of football we're beginning to see. But, you know, let's not overlook the fact that 3 Italian teams were in the finals of the 3 European Cups last season.
Yeah.
And then look where they are again at this point in time. 2 in the Europa League and then 1 in the Conference League in the latter stages of the competition. Now, looks like they're going to get, what, the 5th guaranteed Champions League place as well. I'm just going to say it simply. Is Serie A back?
Well, I mean, that was the caption of a advertising campaign that Serie A put out this time last year, which is Calcio is back. Mm. Now, it's not back to the standards it was in the 80s and 90s where we're talking about kind of pre-Premier League taking off. commercially. We're talking pre-state wealth entering the game. So, yeah, a lot of these sugar daddies in Italy, titans of industry, would go and lavish a lot of their family fortunes on Serie A to the benefit of the league, and they dominated for a long time. I think it's very difficult for them to bridge this gap now that has opened up with the Premier League. So they're having to get smarter. The league has always had an incredible track record of developing coaches. And I think it was interesting to hear Inter's football chief executive, Beppe Marotta, the other week say, I've got a little theory in that it's, you know, best to overpay for a coach than overpay for a player. Because if you overpay for a coach, then you've got someone who can maybe get more out of less with teams. And that's still what Serie A are having to do. You know, the teams in Serie A, they've got a domestic TV rights deal that's gone a few percentage points backwards. Their international TV rights deal is up for tender, but they're looking to sort of just like make up for lost ground because they were very neglectful over the last two decades. They don't have new cash cow stadiums that they can draw upon in the way that, for example, not only Tottenham have, but if you look at Spanish football, Atletico have the Civitas Metropolitana, fantastic stadium. The new Bernabeu is, you know, one of the world's great stadiums. Look at what Barcelona are doing in the Camp Nou. So it's not just sort of keeping up with the Premier League guys. It's like keeping up with what the Spanish giants are doing stadium-wise. And then there's this tax law, which we talked about in the past, which in the last 4 years has given Italian football an edge in the transfer market when it's come to offering players wages that they wouldn't usually be able to afford to do. That's ended as well. But Italian football has shown a better side of itself. And I think one of the reasons for that is they have Andrea Agnelli, I think, during his time as Juventus president, to thank for lobbying the ECA for Serie A to be given just four automatic places in the Champions League. So obviously it's gone from two automatic places to four. So that's given teams more stability, more resources, more continuity. And then you have to say that UEFA in the bringing in a third UEFA competition,
sure,
the
Conference League. Fiorentina were back again.
Yeah, so Roma. So in the first two editions of that competition, Roma won it in the first competition in Tirana against Feyenoord, and then Fiorentina reached the final last year. They may yet reach the final again this time around. And there are still two Italian teams in the semifinals of the Europa League. So Roma reached the Europa League final last year. They're in the semifinals again this year. Atalanta are in the semifinals of a European competition.
Beating Liverpool at Anfield. I mean, what amazing result.
Beating Amorim Sporting as well in the round before. And so as much as people will say, hang on a minute, there were no Italian teams in the quarterfinals, the reason why they are top of the UEFA coefficient and now have a fifth Champions League place is because for the last, well, certainly the last 2 years, but you could say, you know, even going back the last 4 years, they've racked up so many coefficient points by being good across all three competitions. And that speaks to a revival. It's not a restoration of what happened in the 80s and 90s, but certainly you can say that the league is more competitive in Europe than it's been in a long time.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you. Is it more competitive in that respect within the league? Because you look at the rise of a team like Bologna under, you know, Thiago Motta. I mean, it's quite fascinating, that little story, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do you see Serie A? Because we've done a piece on it and used an algorithm to kind of look at which are the most competitive leagues. It does rank fourth behind, you know, La Liga and also the Bundesliga.
What's interesting about it is that what do you want from a league, I suppose? Yeah. And I think what's great about Serie A is there have been, as I mentioned, four different title winners in the last 5 years. Five different coaches have been champion. They were all Italian. And you have these stories where a team actually can, and to be honest, we are seeing it with the likes of Aston Villa in the Premier League this year under Unai Emery, but to have teams that are able to break into that top four, top six, like Atalanta did under Gasperini, 7 years ago, like Bologna are doing now. You know, again, that is something that I think is pretty special. Something that, for example, someone like Roberto Di Zerbi at Sassuolo, well as he did, he wasn't able to push the team through into top four. We mentioned that Serie A will have five teams in the Champions League next year. Bologna don't seem to need fifth spot. They're on course to finish fourth, which is an extraordinary job from Thiago Motta, who, you know, is part of this young new wave of coaches. I suppose if we talk about the guys who've won the league in the last 5 years, they are all, with maybe the exception of Simone Inzaghi, of an age. You know, they're in their 50s and 60s. So the likes of Sarri, Pioli, Spalletti. Inzaghi played in the 90s, early 2000s. There's now a wave of players who come from the next generation. So the likes of De Rossi, Roma, Thiago Motta, Bologna, guys who played under Gasperini. Motta is one of them, but also Raffaele Palladino at Monza, Ivan Juric at Torino. There's this great ability to create very good coaches that make the league. You know, I've always thought, yes, okay, the Premier League is intense from a athletic and fitness and cardio point of view. That is undeniable. But I don't think the gap is so different, so big. I think where Serie A is intense is in the level of kind of tactical instruction, cat and mouse, that you have chess matches going on, games within games. And okay, the Premier League does have a lot of the best managers in the world. It is really not only caught up tactically, but is at the vanguard. But I think Serie A for a long time, in terms of the amount of mental instruction, the amount of mental intensity that there is, makes it a fascinating league. And I think we are now seeing the fruit of foreign investment. You know, there are lots of, yeah, again, all of those teams, with the exception of Napoli and Juventus, who have won titles, have had American investment, Chinese investment, Bologna, sort of Italian, Canadian owned. Obviously, there's been investment from Steve Pagliuca, the kind of co-owner of the Boston Celtics in Atlanta. You look at teams that are going to come up from Serie B. I did a long read on Como, who have, on paper, the richest owners in Italy.
They've been making headlines for the last 2 or 3 years.
Billionaires from Indonesia. And then you've got Parma, American-owned. Venezia, American-owned. So we might get to a stage where the league actually gets to a tipping point where there are more foreign-owned clubs than there are Italian-owned. And if they can all get together and agree on stuff, very difficult, then those guys might be able to push through meaningful infrastructural change, which will put the league in a better place and make it more competitive and more sustainable, which is what, you know, everyone's after, really. So yeah, I think it's a great league to watch if you want variety, if you don't want to see the same team winning every year.
I like that. Let's end it there. That's beautiful. James, thanks so much for your time. And also, do not forget to rate and review the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening.
The Athletic.